All right, guys. Welcome to Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 43. It is Friday, March 26, 2021. I'm coming at you from Milwaukee, Oregon, on the outskirts of the grand social experiment that is Portland, Oregon. Deborah is going to sit this one out, guys. She just drove up from the Bay Area today to Portland, and I think they just got into town. So Emily and their other daughter from Tacoma are going over to meet with them, and they're going to go eat dinner somewhere that has outdoor seating because they're too scared to go inside of a restaurant. I'm here at home by myself, which I prefer. All right, guys. So this week we got some emails. We got one from Rianne, who is our expat friend from Germany. And she sent us some guest recommendations. And then she also wanted some donation info. You can get all our donation info, guys, off of our show notes, or just email me and I'll send you the info. And if you want to donate crypto, you can do it that way. We're value for value. And guys, we need some donations. We put out so much content this month that we went over our bandwidth limit, and I had to upgrade again on our podcast host. So it's pretty cool. It sucks. It costs another $300, but we are graduated into the unlimited bandwidth tier, because we're putting out so much content for you. It's like when we started, we had the free setting, and then pretty quickly we got out of that and had to pay a little bit of money, and then another time we had to upgrade from there, and then this time we finally had to upgrade because we've been putting out so many shows. So send your donations to either PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, or crypto, the preferred way to go. Rianne wanted us to have on, I forget who she wanted us to have on, but it's somebody that wrote about some biblical stuff with aliens and angels. Guys, I am not up to date on my biblical conspiracy stuff. So until then, until I do a little more research, I'm not going to have anybody on because I don't feel comfortable interviewing them well enough with my limited knowledge on the subject. But if you're watching YouTube, I got this book, The Genesis 6 Conspiracy by Gary Wayne. If you can see, it's about 3 inches thick. So I'm going to try to get into this, and I'm going to get a Bible. I'm going to cross-reference it with a Bible. And, who knows, maybe someday I'll be well-versed enough on it to get Gary on, or some of the other guys, Steve Quayle or whoever Rianne wanted me to get. But it's something I'm really interested in. It's just, it's a little bit of a dry subject sometimes, but it's also cool because you get to learn about like giants and shit like that. So we got another email from our friend Chris in Beaverton. It was really nice. He gave me some suggestions on another freedom-minded group that I might go meet up with. And then we got another email from a guy named Francis Bradley, and he described himself as a Deb head, which was kind of funny. And he's kind of going through the same thing, trying to red pill people around him and not having much success. So thanks for the emails, guys. We really, really enjoy them. And I'll try to get back to them. And yeah, keep set. We got a packed schedule. April's all filled up, 2 episodes a week for the whole month. And got some heavy hitters on it. And then we got a little bit of May booked out too. So keep sending us people who you think are attainable for us and what you want to hear about, and I'll do my best. If it's, I started this podcast for selfish reasons, so I kind of want to talk to the people that I want to talk to. But if you guys, maybe there's people out there that I don't even know I want to talk to yet, so let me know. And we got a few donations this week. We got one from our friend with the initials LW, and she's an old friend of mine from my days of running amok in Oakland. And she's been a multiple time donator to the show, and she hit us with a pretty generous donation, so thank you. And then Cody, I wanted to shout out him on the last episode, but I couldn't figure out how to see who sent me money on Cash App. He sent me money again. So Cody, thank you two times for your generous donations. And yeah, guys, value for value. So whatever you get out of the show, give us a couple bucks back. You know, I don't really entertain the idea of ever getting to do this full time, but that would be a dream come true. You know, it doesn't seem that far off that it could happen, but it would take a lot of work. And Greg Carlwood talks about, you know, like his model was trying to get 1,000 people to give him $100 a year. And that would be a hell of a living for just putting out podcasts and doing research. So, you know, if I could get a couple, we've got regular donators now, and we really, really appreciate it, guys. And we're having a good time, and we're, you know, breaking even. And your donations, everything that's not put back into the show, I'm buying books to research stuff with. So thank you. In other news, our last episode with Pat Leach was we got a YouTube strike for it. They took it down off of YouTube, and they cited medical misinformation. So I noticed when I put that episode up, there was another little screen that I had to click some buttons on to go through, where they had to check to make sure there was no copyright infringements. Like, they checked the episode to make sure there's no music and stuff in it. And I think they started looking at it a little bit harder because we got to a certain level of subscribers. So they took that one down. It's still available in podcast form, guys, but they took down the YouTube video. So like I said, YouTube is the enemy of the people. They're not our friends. You know, I'm going to keep using them for stuff that's not controversial, like homesteading stuff and gun stuff and things like that, that they seem to be okay with. But anything to do with something that's not the official narrative on the pandemic 1984, they're going to take down. And the first one for us, they give you a warning. And then after this, I think we're on the radar. They give you 3 strikes, and then they nuke the whole channel. Luckily, I've got every Zoom meeting, every episode I've got saved on Zoom. So if that ever did happen and we didn't have it saved somewhere else, we could still upload it to other places. But I'm really going to start looking into library. I'm going to try to figure out how to download or upload stuff on BitChute. And if you guys have any other alt sites that you've heard of that are good, let us know. And yeah, I know we've got Aaron from Float coming on soon to talk to us about alternative social media sites. So we'll talk to her about it then too. So, you know, other than that, it's pretty cool. We got noticed by YouTube. We got a strike, and that's kind of like a feather in our conspiracy theory podcast hat. So feels like we finally arrived. I was wondering if my sister works for YouTube, if I could contact her and get it taken away, but I don't really want to do that. And I don't think my family even knows that I do a podcast. But yeah, I remember when Sam Tripoli got his channel nuked, and he talked to Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan got it reinstated. So I could probably, maybe I could talk to my sister, but I'm not going to do it. I'm for the people. I'm not going to sidestep what they want. And, you know, we're going to keep going. Let's see. Yeah. So I got some notes written down. It's a little bit hard not to have somebody to bounce stuff off of, to go back and forth. Doing a podcast by yourself is tough. I respect everybody that does it. Guys, we are 95% sure that we are selling our house. We have set a date for the middle of June to have everything prepared by. The realtor who loves our house and has a bunch of people that she knows that are trying to buy, who would be interested in it, you know, gave us like this whole little timeline. Like, we get our house ready to go, they stage it, they list it on the 17th of June, which is like a Wednesday. We'd go out of town. We're going to go on a road trip through Eastern Oregon and into Idaho and Montana, maybe Utah, maybe back through Washington. We're going to be gone. They're going to have open house Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then offers are due by Tuesday. And hopefully a bidding war is induced. But yeah, she said she could sell our house in like a week from start to finish. So we want your emails, guys. Tell us where we should go. If you live in a free state, tell us where in that state. Tell us what's going on with masks. Tell us what's going on with, you know, working. Tell us how the economy is there. We want to know. We want to find the perfect place. And, you know, I don't think I'm going to convince my wife right now to get out of Oregon. I love Oregon, and I wish I could stay. It's just not conducive to what we want out of life right now. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. Weather kind of sucks sometimes, but when it's nice here, it's as nice as it gets. And I love it here. But, you know, last week, Kate Brown, our psychopath Nazi governor, you know, proposed legislation that would make mask mandates permanent forever. And, you know, I'm trying to have kids with my wife, and I do not want to have children growing up in a situation like that. I want my kids to, it's never going to be normal again. I want them to grow up in a place where they have the opportunity to have as normal of a childhood like what I had. So, which would be an abnormal childhood these days, because I was allowed to go out by myself. I was allowed to play. I was allowed to go ride my bike. You know, I didn't have my parents following me around everywhere I went. And that's how I want my kids. I want to have free range kids. And I don't think I can do that here. I want my kids to grow up well adjusted and know what a smile means, know what a frown means, know how to read people's eyes with what's going on with their mouth, you know? So, let's see what else we got going on. Oh, guys, on Sunday, our guest canceled. We were going to do and have Deborah in studio for an episode, but our guest canceled. But that day, I'm going on with Monica Perez from the Propaganda Report again. I'm going on to, I think it's her Patreon. It's like a live Q&A. They're going to talk to me about some agorism stuff. And I think after a while, they let people, or they release it on the regular they're as a regular podcast, so you'll be able to hear it probably a week or so down the road. But yeah, it's funny. She said, she asked me if I wanted to do it, and I was like, yeah, of course. She, you know, she's helped us out and gotten us so many more viewers and listeners to this show, because she's got a pretty big platform. But she's like, I don't know if you'd want to do it, but because there's a federal agent in my Patreon. And I'm like, wow, that's, I was like, I got no problem. You know, if they want to come get me, they can come get me. Like, they can, I've got, you know, 100 hours of podcast stuff that they can, you know, red flag me if they want to. So I told her I'd talk about everything except for guns, you know. So it's weird. Her, like, her platform, she says, like, we're about, you know, the current events from a perspective of freedom and liberty. I wonder how somebody that works for the federal government squares that circle, because, you know, if you're taking a paycheck from somebody's checks, somebody's taxes, and then you're limiting people's freedoms and liberties. I don't understand how you'd want to, you know. Maybe I'll ask. I'm going to call them out on the show though. So, yeah. So I know there's a couple people that are listening that probably have Patreon subscription to the Prop Report. So listen to me on Sunday. Today, guys, we're going to be talking about crypto. I got this guy on from New Hampshire, and he's a Ravencoin proponent. So we're going to get into that, but I'm also going to keep it a little bit more basic. So people that listen to the show, I know a lot of my friends that listen, and a lot of people haven't made the jump to crypto yet. Guys, you got to do it. You got to do it. Let me know and I'll help you. I will help you as much as I can. You got to get out of the fucking traditional banking system. I know we all have to still operate in it. If you have a regular job and you're getting direct deposit, all that stuff, you're getting paid, you're getting a paycheck, you're paying taxes. I get it. But get a fucking crypto wallet. Go get an Exodus wallet on the App Store. Hit me up and I'll tell you what to do. You can always buy $100 worth of crypto, no matter how much it costs. But, you know, wouldn't you rather buy $1,000 worth of crypto when it's worth $50,000 instead of buying $1,000 when it's worth $200,000? And it's coming, guys. So today we're going to figure it out, where crypto's going, how we can operate with it, what's going on with this Raven coin that this guy Aaron is a proponent of. And, but guys, get on it now. The whole point of it is that I want everybody to be so fucking filthy rich from crypto that money doesn't even matter anymore. And like these fucking assholes, these fucking bankers and rich motherfuckers who don't do shit for the world except fucking take and oppress people and fucking have never put in a hard day's work in their life. So we don't have to fucking worry about them anymore and we can just forget it. And I think crypto is the tool that we can use. So with all that, I'm glad I got through this intro by myself. Hopefully it was okay. I'm going to pause, guys. I'm going to get my guest in here and we'll be back in a minute. All right, hold on. All right, guys, we're back and we're here with our guest, Aaron. Ravencoin is Bitcoin 3.0 day. And he's coming at us from New Hampshire, and we're really happy to have him here. He rescheduled for us a bunch of times, so we appreciate it, Aaron. And how's it going tonight?
It's going really well. It's an exciting time.
So are you in New Hampshire?
Yes, I'm in New Hampshire.
Are you a member?
I've been here for about 12 years.
Okay, and you're a member of the Free State Project?
Correct.
Is that what brought you to New Hampshire?
It is. I was living in Massachusetts prior to that. I actually grew up in Indiana, but I lived in Massachusetts for about 5 years and was sick of the taxes, sick of, you know, the political environment, sick of the regulation, and found out about the Free State Project, which is a movement to get 20,000 liberty-loving people to move to New Hampshire. And I would say, you know, some people mischaracterize it. It's really the state motto of New Hampshire is live free or die. And that really resonates with what the Free State Project is all about. So it's really more about concentrating pro-liberty people in a state that's already pro-liberty. And that's essentially what it's all about. So I moved up in 2008, 2009. And I've got kids, so our kids were born in New Hampshire and have been here ever since.
That's great. And are you in Keene?
No, I'm not in Keene. I've only been to Keene once, so I'm actually in the southern part of the state.
Okay, but the Free State Project isn't located in, you don't have to be in Keene to be part of it. You can be anywhere in New Hampshire.
Well, you don't have to be Keene to be a part of it. And actually, some of the stuff that goes on with Keene really doesn't have anything to do with the Free State Project, even though the folks out there are part of the Free State Project. The Free State Project is, there is favors of libertarian and are people that are libertarian. And so there are people that do different things, different forms of activism all over the state.
Got it. What, if you don't mind labeling yourself, what flavor of libertarian are you?
Just a small, limited government libertarian.
Do you call yourself a minarchist?
Yeah, I guess that would probably, you know, I tend to not look for labels. So. Got it.
Yeah, yeah.
On the political front, I've gotten involved in politics and have been everything from a libertarian Republican to a big L libertarian to an independent. So I've kind of crossed all of those paths. And then ultimately to end up not being involved in politics at all. So
yeah, yeah. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I follow it pretty heavily, but you know, I started as, you know, finding out about, I started out as a Bernie bro, and then went to, you know, listen to Dave Smith and, you know, kind of went down that path and am looking more for solutions rather than philosophy right now. So I'm currently calling myself an agorist. So when did you first get involved with crypto?
Well, actually, as part of the Free State Project, was introduced to it in 2012. So the Free State Project has been, a lot of the members of the community here have been involved in crypto from the very beginning. And in fact, some of the Free State Project events were taking crypto as payments for our events going back as early as 2012, 2013. So that's when I first got exposed to it. You know, I wish I had bought more and engaged more in 2013. It was more kind of I was exposed to it, but wasn't, you know, fully kind of invested in it. But I actually, some of the political activity I was involved in, we raised money for political action committees and for candidates in 2014 using Bitcoin, which was a pretty novel thing to do at the time. So that's how I started to get involved. I remember at one of the Free State Project events called Liberty Forum, I bought Bitcoin, $1 worth of Bitcoin, through an ATM at one of the events. One of the exhibitors had created one of the first ever Bitcoin ATMs. And so that was a really cool experience.
What percentage of a full Bitcoin was $1 at the time?
Not enough. I actually, at that point in time in 2013, it was still, it had gone through a peak. So it wasn't like one of those things where it was 10 cents. It was a very small fraction of a Bitcoin.
Got it. Yeah. I always say to myself, like, man, I wish I would have gotten in, you know, early, which everybody says, but I probably would have sold all my Bitcoin when it was $1,000 or something like that, when I thought it had gone through the roof, you know?
Well, and I think most people did. I mean, even though there are a lot of people, I know there was one guy who was a vendor at Porkfest, and he used to sell baklava and like omelets, things like that. And he only took Bitcoin. And this was back in 2013, 2014. He accumulated a ton of Bitcoin and he kept a lot of, he sold those, but he still managed to keep a lot of Bitcoin. But if he kept, you know, and this is one of the things where they talk about Bitcoin pizzas. If this guy kept all of the Bitcoin that he had from selling baklava, you know, he'd be a billionaire.
Yeah, if you guys don't know what Aaron's talking about, what is it that some guy bought a pizza way back when, it was like, it's worth like $10 million right now or something like that.
Yeah, yep.
Oh, well.
So, but New Hampshire, I think per capita, has the highest Bitcoin and overall crypto usage. I mean, there are multiple stores and restaurants here where you can use crypto. I think the first house was purchased with a Bitcoin here. I know people that have bought and sold cars here with crypto. I mean, and this is going back years. So this is definitely the early adopter place for crypto.
Cool. Yeah, it's still, you know, it's still in the early days, you know, it's still, I live in Oregon and, you know, there's nothing, I don't know anything here that takes any sort of crypto as payment.
Yep.
So I kind of want to keep it a little bit basic. I know a lot of my listeners haven't made the jump yet. You know, I've been in since, you know, early 2018. So I got a little bit like last year, my union allowed us to take out a pretty good chunk of our retirement with no tax penalty, you know, so we just had to pay regular taxes on it and didn't get that extra, the penalty taken out because of COVID. So yeah. I did that and put it all into a few different Bitcoins and, or a few different kinds of crypto, and it turned out good for me, you know? So, the thing that I'm trying to keep up on. So I'm doing, you know, this is a conspiracy podcast. I'm trying to keep up on so many different things. Can you explain some of the differences between like the big names in crypto, like Bitcoin and Ethereum, and like what differentiates them from each other?
Well, there are a lot of different cryptos and a lot of things that differentiate them, but Bitcoin is fundamentally about having a very decentralized and censorship resistant way of doing transactions. And it uses something called proof of work. So basically, you know, if you and I are doing a transaction, if we're buying stock or using a bank, there's somebody that is controlling the central ledger. So when you're buying stock, there are these intermediaries, whether it's the stock exchange or whatever, that's actually handling the buying and selling of the shares. And the bank too. I mean, they print up money and you know, basically have these ledgers where they're moving around digital bits that represent money. And the innovation with Bitcoin is you can actually conduct trade with somebody without having to have any kind of intermediary at all. So there's this database that you can only write to. And the person who determines what you write to has to solve a very complicated mathematical equation. And you have all of these computers all over the world trying to solve at the same time this mathematical equation. And the person that does it first adds to the database. I mean, that's kind of the simplest way that I can describe it. But it's completely decentralized. No one is in control. It's not like the situations here where the stock markets or the banks are controlled by a small group of elite people. It's completely decentralized. Whoever solves that equation first gets to add to that database. Ethereum started that way, but then they're moving away from proof of work to proof of stake, where, you know, the people that have the most Ethereum, in essence, get to decide what gets added to that database. So in my opinion, and the reason that I'm involved in crypto is I'm in crypto for the freedom aspect of it, for the decentralization aspect, for getting rid of that middleman, for allowing people to do trade without these third parties in the middle that cause all the corruption and increase all the cost. So my view is that Ethereum and any coin that is proof of stake is moving away from the real, I think, value of crypto, which is to be decentralized using proof of work as the mechanism. So that's the big difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum. Now, a lot of coins that you will buy if you're investing in them are actually tokens that are created on Ethereum. And some are like Ravencoin, forks of Bitcoin, where they took the proof of work and the core algorithms and everything and the model from Bitcoin and just duplicated it and then made some adjustments to it. So, but a lot of what you're seeing right now are just tokens that somebody created on top of Ethereum, which uses this proof of stake or is moving to a proof of stake approach.
Got it. And so Ravencoin, which you're a proponent of, is based off of Bitcoin.
It's based off of Bitcoin. So it has all of the features of Bitcoin in terms of the security and the decentralization. But what it adds is for the ability for you to create tokens, your own token, without having to do any programming or do smart contracts, which is how Ethereum does. Ethereum allows you to create tokens, but you have to create what's called a smart contract. These smart contracts can be hacked. They're expensive. And with Ravencoin, you can just create your own token in like a minute. And it's directly on the blockchain. And now you're up and running with your own tokens. You can create a token for your company. You can create, you know, NFTs are popular right now. It costs 5 Raven, which is, you know, or 1 Raven is like 20 cents right now. So it costs $1 to create an NFT token representing art or whatever you want it to represent. You can create that on Ravencoin in a minute for basically a dollar, as opposed to spending tens of thousands of dollars on smart contracts using Ethereum. So that's essentially what Ravencoin is all about. It's about being able to tokenize anything, but on top of the security and the decentralization of Bitcoin. And when I say tokenize anything, you literally can tokenize stocks, real estate, anything that's physical or digital of any size, you can tokenize and make available for trade. So the opportunity here is absolutely phenomenal in terms of when you think of any market where there's a middleman or where there's corruption, which, let's face it, is every single market.
Yeah.
market, you can actually tokenize these assets and trade them on Ravencoin without a middleman, and you can do it quickly and cheaply. That's why I'm excited about Ravencoin, because it's really about the freedom of allowing people globally to trade without the corruption and middlemen. That's it.
Yeah. What's the process for tokenizing something?
I mean, the process is you just download a wallet, and within the wallet, there's an opportunity that says create an asset, and you click create an asset, and there are different kinds of assets. Like if you had a company and you wanted to issue shares, you would create what's called a main asset, and you would spend 500 Raven. And then with that 500 Raven, let's say it's XYZ company, you could create up to 21 billion tokens with that XYZ company for 500 Raven. Or if you wanted to create a token for an NFT or a piece of art or whatever, that costcosts 5 Raven.
So if I have Raven coin,
other two.
All my Raven coin on an Exodus wallet. And you can do it through that?
No, you can't do that through an Exodus wallet. And I've used Exodus wallet as well. You can use Exodus to send and receive Raven coin, but if you want to actually deal with assets, you need to use either the desktop wallet from Ravencoin or the mobile wallet, the official wallets, or there's a new wallet called Stibitz, which was actually created by the same guy who created the original mobile wallet for Ravencoin.
Okay.
Those allow you to create assets within those wallets.
Got it. And so it's usually just the actual official wallet from the coin that allows you to use it for assets.
Well, Ravencoin is unique with this asset feature, but there in the future, other wallets, like I hope Exodus, there's no reason that Exodus couldn't add the ability to create and trade assets within the wallet. In fact, I hope they do that. There's another wallet, third-party wallet called Zelcor, that allows you to create and trade. I don't know if it allows you to create, but it allows you to trade the tokens created on Ravencoin. So in the future, I'm hoping, you know, that you don't have to just use the official wallet. And in fact, you don't. Stibitz is a third-party company. But it would require any wallet like Exodus to do additional work to be able to handle the creation and transfer of tokens created on Ravencoin.
Yeah. So how did you get first hear about it or get involved with Ravencoin?
Well, I first heard about it because one of the co-authors of the white paper for Ravencoin is a free stater named Bruce Fenton. And I was friends with him. I'm friends with him on Twitter. I mean, excuse me, on Facebook. And he sent out a note on Facebook saying, hey, you know, we've started this open source project. Check it out. Here's the white paper. You can mine using your computer, using your CPU. At the time, this was before anybody was really, you know, having to use GPUs or anything to mine it. So I'm like, all right, I'll check it out. And so I downloaded a wallet, started actually mining from my computer, and then really just started to investigate, learn more about the project, read the white paper, watch a lot of Bruce's videos. And Bruce used to be the chairman of the Bitcoin Foundation. So Bruce has a really interesting background. So he's very familiar with Bitcoin, but he also has a background as a stockbroker and being involved with securities. So he knows kind of both sides of it. He knows the Bitcoin side of it, but he also knows how stocks work or don't. Which is a better way of looking at it. And so that's how I originally discovered it and have gotten increasingly involved ever since. In fact, I haven't stopped. I mean, I've grown and gotten more and more involved with the project as time's gone on.
How long has it been around for?
It's been around for, I think, almost 3.5 years.
Okay. Got it. And you're saying it's like 20 cents right now, right? But it's gone way up.
It's 20 cents right now. Oh, it's gone way up. I mean, it hasn't been. I mean, it was 1.2 cents 90 days ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, for most of the time I've been involved in this, it's been, you know, it hasn't been a great, you know, financial winner, but I'm interested in the actual implementation of it. And we're now starting to see real projects being built on Ravencoin. And I think once people understand that you can use this to trade anything of any size, stocks, real estate, art, whatever, once people realize the power of what you can do with it, it's going to explode. I mean, you mentioned when you introduced me, Raven, Aaron, Raven coin is Bitcoin 3.0 day. Well, Patrick Byrne actually coined that phrase. Patrick's was the founder of Overstock, and created something called Medici Ventures, which was part of Overstock, which invested in like 20 different blockchain companies. And when he said Raven coin is Bitcoin 3.0, it's because you have Bitcoin, which does what Bitcoin does, which is it's really a store of value. It's digital gold. Bitcoin 2.0 is really Ethereum, and Ravencoin is Bitcoin 3.0. It really builds on top of that. So you have all of the security and proof of work and decentralization of Bitcoin, but you get the tokens, which is what Ethereum is famous for, but without having to go through the process of having smart contracts and all the complex programming. Got so it. That's how that whole Bitcoin 3.0 came about.
Yeah. I think what a lot of people who are new to it, myself included, is to crypto in general. I was listening to Vin Armani on Thaddeus Russell's podcast a few days ago, and he was talking about how people need to stop. I mean, it is a good store of money as a hedge against the dollar, but people need to stop thinking about I can put $100 into Bitcoin and someday I'll be a millionaire. People need to realize that that's not what it was meant for. And that's not what it's supposed to do. Does that make sense?
No, and I know Vin. Vin he lived in New Hampshire for a while as part of the Free State Project. And in fact, Vin created something called Cointext, which for a while, I think he discontinued it, but I worked with him. He integrated Ravencoin. And so you could literally SMS somebody Ravencoin using this app that Vin created. But Vin's exactly right. The white paper, this wasn't about sitting on it and holding it. It was about using it. It was about having peer-to-peer electronic cash, a better form of cash, so that people anywhere in the world could send and receive money that was fast and cheap. You should be able to do microtransactions. And this idea of, I like Bitcoin because of the underlying security model, but you can't use Bitcoin. You can't buy anything under $50 and use Bitcoin and have it be economical. That's not what the point of Bitcoin was. Ravencoin, on the other hand,
why is Bitcoin? I understand what you're saying. So if you guys don't know, if you try to buy, if you transfer Bitcoin, it costs a lot. There's a big transaction fee, and it can take up to a couple hours, sometimes more than that. Why is it if it was originally meant to be something that you spend and make transactions with, why is it like that now?
There are different reasons behind this, and there are different people who argue different things. There's a guy, Craig Wright, who claims to be Satoshi Nakamoto, and most people in the community think he's not or don't want him to be. But his model is that you increase the size of the blocks. So when Bitcoin was started, there were 1 megabyte blocks, which means that, again, this model of it's a database, and every 10 minutes you add 1 megabyte's worth of transactions to it. Well, if you have a lot of transactions within 10 minutes, 1 megabyte won't hold that many transactions. And so people have to wait. But the white paper talks about, or some of the discussion boards talk about, well, 1 megabyte was just there to start. You can increase the size. There was no reason to have 10 megabyte blocks in 2009 because nobody was using it. So the idea was, well, over time, we'll increase the size of these blocks. Well, some of the developers that took over for Ravencoin said, well, now we'll keep the blocks small, and then we'll add what's called a second layer solution. We'll do things on top of the core chain. And so they've created these things called Lightning Network and everything else that haven't really proven to work yet. So as a result, everything's gotten bottlenecked. And so it's turned into this whole big drama. So you had Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin turned into Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. Then Bitcoin Cash turned into Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin SV, which is Bitcoin Satoshi's vision, which is run by that guy who I mentioned, Craig Wright, who claims to be Satoshi Nakamoto. And he's implementing a version of Bitcoin that he claims goes back to the original white paper that has big blocks. So I just saw something last week where they did a test with like a 638 megabyte block. So this Bitcoin SV version of it is going down this path of actually making these blocks bigger, which their transactions are fast and cheap. You can on BSV do nearly instantaneous transactions that are, you know, a fraction of a penny in cost, which is kind of in line with the original white paper. The Bitcoin folks are now going down on this model of, well, it's supposed to be a store of value. So look at Bitcoin as digital gold. And then they're trying to build these solutions on top of Bitcoin that in the future, you'll be able to do micropayments and smaller transactions. That hasn't been realized yet. Ravencoin is a bit different in that Ravencoin has, instead of 10-minute blocks, we have 1-minute blocks. And then we have 2 megabyte right now block size, which we could increase. So Ravencoin has a lot more transaction capabilities and is much less expensive to use. In fact, you can do micro transactions on Ravencoin. There was a day a few weeks back, I don't know if you caught this, where the Federal Reserve literally went offline and banks couldn't send money back and forth to one another. Well, on that day, I went onto Twitter and I did a giveaway and I was giving people a fraction of a cent worth of Ravencoin. And the reason I was doing that is because I could. And you literally couldn't do that even on a good day. If the Federal Reserve was working, you still couldn't send a fraction of a penny. And if you're dealing with credit cards, every time you use a credit card, the merchant has to pay 3.29% of the transaction plus 30 cents. So the fact that I could send people a tenth of a cent is a novel invention. That's what Satoshi had in the white paper. That's part of the promise of digital peer-to-peer cash. And I know Vin is a proponent of this as well. I mean, this isn't supposed to be sit on this stuff. The whole point of you have miners mining blocks, and so you may have heard of this. Like originally with Bitcoin, if you would mine a block, if you were one of the miners that solved this math problem, you would get 50 Bitcoin. And then after 4 years, a block would go down to 25, and it's called a halving. And then after another 4 years, we'd go down to 12 and a half Bitcoin. Well, the whole purpose and the whole reason for doing that is to provide an incentive for miners to build out this network so that at some point in the future, when after all these halvings have happened, the way miners would make money is off of transaction fees. So it's an incentive system to build the network, build out the security, so that ultimately at some point in time, there are enough transactions that miners are making money off of transactions, but they wouldn't be at the beginning because there aren't any transactions. Now it's all lopsided. So people are investing in this. Like for instance, in the example of Bitcoin, if they're moving all the transactions to this Lightning network, there would be no transaction fees for miners. So at some point, when the mining rewards go away, if all of the transactions are going on at the second layer, what's the incentive for miners to continue to mine? It's kind of a broken system, if you think about it. I may be getting too much into the weeds here.
No, man, I like it. Like,
I apologize for that.
No, like all this stuff is like the stuff that I don't know anything about. You know, it's like kind of like I've got this stuff, and it's I'm using it the way that Vin Armani says not to. So I, being of the mindset that I am, I want it as a way to spend money as a way to spend as well, that's not, compromised by the government or a third party. So, go ahead.
So the point is with Ravencoin, you can use Ravencoin as cash, as kind of a better, I would say better form of Bitcoin, but through tokenization, you can make anything available for trade. So now it's like now you can sell literally anything that you can tokenize. That's why it's even bigger than cash. It's bigger than gold. I actually tried to summarize at one point. Well, how much economic value? How many assets are there? What could you digitize with this? And I stopped when I got to like $300 trillion worth of assets that you could tokenize and trade using Ravencoin. It's that big. There are numbers that you can't even contemplate or really even understand. So it's that ability to trend. I use Ravencoin all the time. I use it. Like I've invested in it. I hold a bunch of it, but I've also used and spent a bunch of it. I used it to buy, I bought silver. Somebody tokenized silver put it on the Ravencoin blockchain, and I bought it, and they actually shipped me silver, little silver rounds from Korea, of all places, from South Korea. So I now have a tokenized piece of silver that's on the blockchain that now I can sell to somebody else, and I've got proof of authenticity. I've bought wine through Ravencoin. I've bought art. I've sold art. My daughter drew a picture of a butterfly, and we sold it through a Twitter auction, and the proceeds went to the Ravencoin Foundation to work on development. So you can actually do stuff now with Ravencoin, both using it as a currency, but also trading assets, trading all kinds of really interesting things. Somebody just sold stock in a company that's building a resort in the Philippines. There's a new project coming up on Ravencoin where somebody has taken the largest sapphire in the world. It's like $150 million sapphire, and they're selling fractional ownership in the sapphire. So they're making that available. So like, it's just the stuff that you wouldn't even think of, right? It's like, who would think of owning a piece that you could own $500 worth of $150 million sapphire?
Yeah.
And that sapphire then is sent all over the world to museums, and they're earning money off of displaying the sapphire, and you get dividends as an owner in a fraction of a, like who would have thought of that before? Right.
Yeah. How do you,
but there are other things that you can do with Ravencoin.
Sorry. How do you find stuff that's been tokenized like that you can buy with Ravencoin?
That's the tricky. So the tricky part is we're working on creating a marketplace for this. Because honestly, right now it's been truly peer to peer. It's like I go online or I go into a discussion board. It's like, this guy's got this project, and you know, look, and I had to trust that he wasn't going to rip me off. And you know, like I sent him Ravencoin, he sent me silver. There was no middleman. We both could have gotten ripped, you know, or I could have gotten ripped off, but I didn't. So far everything's been like that. But here's the cool thing. Ravencoin just launched 2 weeks ago. In fact, I'm in a car right now because I'm running late because I was in long story short, I was in this virtual reality environment that's been created for the Ravencoin community called the Ravencoin Campus. So it's literally a 3D, it's like there's a campus, there are multiple auditoriums,
oh, wow.
There are meeting rooms, there's a dance hall, there's a soccer field. And so you sign up for this thing with your avatar, and you can interact with people in the Ravencoin community. Well, tonight, in fact, I missed it because I'm doing this. I just saw on Twitter, they did the first ever NFT auction in this 3D environment. So somebody bought it's like a picture of the Mona Lisa with somebody with a face mask that says, you know, Ravencoin on it. But people were bidding on this. So you go into this art museum, 3D art museum, and there's the picture of the art with a barcode, and you use your wallet and you place your bid. You scan the QR code and place your bid. So that's the next version of that, is an expanded marketplace that you can go to. So this is going to be like a 3D interactive environment where people can buy and sell assets that are all Ravencoin related. So that's point number one. And then there are other people working on mobile apps and other marketplaces for buying and selling this. But there's also security tokens. So being able to buy and sell shares that are tokenized. And the way that works is you'll be able to buy and sell those security tokens on exchanges. So Ravencoin, the technology, is integrating with a variety of different exchanges. So you'll be able to buy and sell, just like right now you can buy and sell cryptos, you'll be able to buy and sell actual stock representative security tokens through exchanges as well. So all of this is being built out. All of these marketplaces and exchanges are being built out, and Ravencoin is positioning itself to be able to integrate with multiple wallets. You know, like you said, I like Exodus too. I bet at some point, I don't know when in the future, you'll be able to buy tokens that are created on Ravencoin within the Exodus wallet. And so Ravencoin will make itself available to work with all of the wallets, all of the exchanges, and then some of these like other cool environments, like this Ravencoin campus thing. That's like this 3D interactive world.
Yeah.
It's early.
Yeah. Do you ever see it just like, the NFT thing, it was, I understand it a little bit better since what you've been talking about, but before it was way over my head. Do you see it like ever see there being like some sort of like Craigslist or classifieds like for finding stuff that you can buy. Like, is that something, or am I way off?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the Stibitz wallet that I mentioned, they're working on this as well. So this is a wallet that's a third party, but you can download it. You can create assets with it. But I think one of the things they're working on is a marketplace, just like you described, a marketplace where you can buy and sell assets.
Okay.
So yeah, that's in the works. I mean, I know that there are people working on this, and that's exactly where this is going. Now, there are legal issues with this. And a lot of this depends on which country you're in. One of the things that's fascinated me about Ravencoin is learning how global this is. I mean, I met with this week, people came to New Hampshire that I met with from Morocco, Korea. I've met people from France. I've met people from all over the world that have different applications for this, because I've been US focused and I think about, well, this would be great for this or this, but in other countries, this is, you know, going to be a must have, this isn't like a nice to have, makes things a little bit more efficient. You look at what's going on in Nigeria and you look at other countries, Turkey, their value of their currency collapsed 17% in one day.
Yeah.
So this blockchain stuff and getting the middleman out, the worst middleman of all anywhere is the state. And it's just a matter of how bad it is, how bad your state is, but they're all bad.
Yeah.
And so it's really, to me, the thing that's the most exciting about being involved in Ravencoin is meeting people from all over the world and finding out that they want freedom and seeing how this can be used to help them achieve freedom. That's the coolest thing for me about the whole project.
Got it. So I know that Ravencoin, so you were on with my friend Matt, who does the Resistance Chronicle podcast, and that's where I first heard about it. And after that, he sent me $100 worth of Ravencoin, which was really generous. It's available on Binance, right? That's where I've gotten it from.
Yep.
Binance kind of sucks. It's kind of hard to use. Where else can you get it?
It's on 35 different exchanges. Oh, so if you go to ravencoin.org, there's a tab that says where to buy. But the truth is, this is a problem, right? Right now, I've introduced this to a lot of people, and it's like, it takes time to get on an exchange. They have to verify who you are. And then, and because of the backlog and the interest in crypto, I had people that I suggested it to when it was at 7 cents, and then they weren't able to get buy any until it was like 23 cents.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened to me.
So Binance is actually surprisingly one of the better ones. Bittrex is another one that's okay. T0 is one that's good, but they have a limit of $500 per day right now that you can buy. Now, it's Ravencoin has submitted a listing to Coinbase. So we think it's going to be on Coinbase because we do meet their criteria. So we're hoping to be on Coinbase soon. And also Kraken. But there are some interesting services that are like something like called changenow.io. I've used something like this before where you can buy another crypto. Like, I wouldn't use Bitcoin for this because this is again one of those things where I've helped people by using Bitcoin Cash, so they can buy Bitcoin Cash on Coinbase. And then you use a service like changenow. What changenow does is you basically are swapping cryptocurrencies. So you send them Bitcoin Cash, and then they bridge, they do all the connections in the back end, and then they send Ravencoin directly to your wallet. So you're not actually even using an exchange. Like you don't have to log into their account, you know what I mean? It's like a direct transfer.
Got it.
So that's another way to go about doing it. So change now. .io, I believe, is a good one for that.
So what's your opinion on some of these exchanges like Coinbase and the whole KYC versus, you know, being super secret? Like I run around in some anarchist circles, and there's people that are like, you know, some people are like totally private, only peer-to-peer. Some people are, you know, okay with KYC. You know, I've got a bunch of mine on like in a Celsius account. So like Celsius or BlockFi. What's your opinions on the different ways to do it?
I mean, I hate KYC. And I mean, there's been all the research done on all the kind of devastation of it. I haven't worked around it myself. And there are real issues with it. I mean, you mentioned the Free State Project earlier. I mean, some of the people in Keene were arrested. And one of the guys, Ian Freeman, is Free Talk Live co-host, is facing up to 10 years in prison for operating ATMs, Bitcoin ATMs in New Hampshire. And the federal government came in and said, well, you're a money transmitter and you didn't do the proper KYC. And now you're looking at potentially 10 years in jail. So I would advise for people to be really careful about stuff like this, like trying to avoid this stuff, because you can get into a lot of trouble. And this is one of those things where in New Hampshire, they actually passed laws, getting rid of state money transmitter laws, making it okay for Bitcoin. And I think people had a false sense of security that, oh, this is okay now.
Yeah.
But the federal government will come in and stomp over everybody and everything. So I hate KYC, but I don't know how you honestly get around it, because here's something important for people to understand. Unless it's a cryptocurrency like Monero, people need to understand that these are immutable ledgers. These are databases that are write only, and ultimately you can everything's actually tracked, right? I mean, if you look at Silk Road and some of these other things, I don't think people sat down and it's not completely anonymous. And if at any point you have to convert to fiat and you go to an exchange, that you're going to be able to connect all the dots and track you through the blockchain. So a lot of people don't realize that, and they try to, and eventually they get caught. So that's, I would advise people to understand, if they're trying to get around KYC and everything else, they really need to understand what's going on here. Because even with a Bitcoin ATM or something, they may think, oh, I'm pulling this out of a Bitcoin ATM, there's no KYC. Well, that's not strictly, there are monitors and people looking out for stuff like that, which is what we just found here in New Hampshire. I mean, the FBI, there were 5 agencies that cracked down on these Bitcoin ATMs. And I actually don't think Ian violated the KYC. He was pretty diligent about this stuff. I don't even think he violated the law. And he did $10 million worth of Bitcoin fiat transactions in 5 years. Here's a fun fact. The banks paid $14 billion in fees last year for money laundering, right? I mean, the irony of this is nobody went to jail, but the banks paid $14 billion in fees. I mean, I think people can try to be overly cutesy and those people end up in jail. So I hate KYC, but I also, at the same time, still don't comply with the stuff to the extent that it's, necessary.
Yeah, I totally understand.
And I don't avoid taxes either. To give you another one, I mean, I hate taxes. This is a valuable piece of advice for your audience, is to know the difference between capital gains and ordinary income. If you hold your crypto for a year or more and you sell it, then you're at a capital gains tax rate as opposed to an ordinary income tax rate. And what that means is, for like the first, I think it's $40,000 on long-term capital gains, you pay 0%. And then from like $40,000 to $450,000, it's 15%. And anything above $450,000 is 20%. So that's legitimately long-term capital gains. So like the first $40,000, you don't even own here. Just a tip to keep in mind.
Got it. Yeah. That's kind of what I was, thinking about. I was trying to do the whole like super secret thing. And then I thought, like, what if, if somebody has a couple Bitcoin, it goes to $200,000 and you like want to go buy a house with your Bitcoin. It's like, it's going to be hard to go find enough Bitcoin meetups and sell $100 of Bitcoin at the park enough times to, be able to get your money out into a form of currency that you could go make a down payment with or something like that. And that's kind of why I looked at like the whole Celsius thing. I heard a guy that I know that's pretty smart with Bitcoin. He said, would you rather be, a poor guy that doesn't pay taxes or a rich guy that does? So
yeah. And if you're doing long-term capital gains, I mean, again, 0 to 20% is a hell of a lot better than, I mean, this is one of the other good things about living in New Hampshire. We don't have any state capital gain. So yeah. I mean, the fact that on the first $40,000 in any one year, there's no tax. I mean, all right, that's pretty good. So I, you know, that I've never seen anybody not paying taxes has not turned out to be a very good form of protest. It like that just kills people every time. As much as, again, you know, I mean, I run as a libertarian with taxation is theft as a motto, but at the same time, not paying taxes is it's not effective as a form of protest.
Yeah.
At this point.
Hey, my dog's crying. I gotta go open the door real quick. Can I pause real quick? I got a couple more questions to ask. I'll be right back. Sorry, guys. All right, guys, we're back. Okay, so kind of covered a bunch of stuff that I had questions about. What exchange would you recommend people use for anything in general, but with Ravencoin as well?
I'm kind of a Ravencoin only kind of person. Not that I'm against those other coins, but I would recommend either Binance or do Coinbase and buy Bitcoin Cash and use Change Now to convert it into Ravencoin. Those are the two things that I would recommend that are the fastest. Possibly T0, again, limits of $500 per day, and I don't know how long it takes to get on board, but Binance or Coinbase for Bitcoin Cash and then convert that to Ravencoin. Those would be my first two recommendations at this point.
Got it. So,
one other big recommendation though, take your crypto off of the exchange after you've bought it. If they're not your keys, it's not your crypto. If you leave, exchanges get hacked all of the time. And like, so the very first two exchanges that carried Ravencoin are no longer in business. And there are people that I told that originally bought into this exchange called CryptoBridge. There are people I said, it's literally the only place you could buy it. I said, once you buy it, pull it off immediately. And there are some people that left it on there and lost part or all of their Ravencoin. So big. Now, and again, there's a big responsibility with all this stuff. So it's one thing to say, hey, listen, let's separate money in state and we get to be our own bank. The problem with it, but if you don't pay attention to what you're doing, if you don't look into security and you don't look into, you know, writing down the 12 word seed phrase and anything else like that, if you lose it, there's no customer support. There's you can't get it back. Right. So this is like, take ownership of this stuff, take it seriously, learn about it, and stay on top of it. That's the biggest piece of advice I could give.
Yeah. It's like, it goes back to the cost of freedom being constant vigilance. You know, if you want freedom, you gotta take care of it for yourself. You can't rely on somebody else to come help you out when you need it. So that's what I ultimately
want. That's the truth. I mean, that's the truth with crypto. That's the truth with crypto. I mean, the truth is it's not easier yet, right? Like right now, it's not easy doing all this stuff. Oh, I've got to go to this exchange. I've got to download this wallet. I've got to back this up here. I mean, it's not. It should be, and it will be easier at some point, but you've got to put in some time and effort if you're going to engage in crypto right now. And you've got to learn through. But it's like you said, that, you know, somebody told me they use crypto.com to buy Ravencoin, and which I'd heard good things about, but then I heard that they couldn't actually take the coins off of crypto.com. So like, just so look out for this stuff. So again, Binance and this Coinbase Change Now option, I think are solid, but just so long as people don't keep the stuff on the exchange.
Got it. Yeah. I'll look into that whole, how to change it with Bitcoin Cash. That sounds much better to me. So what do you see as the future going ahead for Ravencoin and, you know, crypto in general? What do you expect the next few years?
So the way I like to frame this is like, we are in the real war going on right now is centralization versus decentralization. It doesn't matter what the political parties are, even what countries are. You have all of these central banks trying to push the Great Reset and everything integrating and digital central bank currencies and all this other stuff. And then you have a movement like Bitcoin and Ravencoin and everything else. And the outcome isn't determined. It's an actual war. I can tell you what I'm doing. I think I'm all into crypto. I mean, I don't use a bank account anymore. Like I'm taking an extreme view on this, but in part because, you know, where you place your attention is where you place your energy. And I don't want to hedge on this. I want to move into this kind of model. I think the regulators have got let this get carried away from them. I think that they could have stopped it at some point. And now that you have institutions buying Bitcoin and everything else, I mean, what are they going to do? Shut off the internet? Which even if they shut off the internet, that wouldn't necessarily work. But they're not going to go down without a fight. So you're going to see, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I mean, last week it was India was going to put forward a bill to ban crypto. China had banned Bitcoin at one point, and that didn't happen. So far, Bitcoin has actually won when governments have said they're going to ban it. But I think you're going to see increasing attempts at regulation, and then you're going to see different, like we're not going to have as many cryptos as we have right now. There's going to be a shakeout. Like the way I like to say it is I started my first company during the dot-com era, and the overall impact of the dot-com era was larger than everybody thought, but 99% of the companies failed. And I think this is going to be the same here. You're not going to have 1,000 different blockchains, but the overall transformation that comes out of blockchain is going to be even larger than anybody thinks that it is. I think you're going to see an interesting shakeout happen, and a lot of these cryptos are going to go away. Part of the reason that I am committed to Ravencoin is because of the commitment by the Ravencoin community to decentralization. And I'll add one thing about what that means. So there's proof of work, which I mentioned before, is this whole idea of you have computers competing all over the world to solve these math problems. And the first one to gets that block. And so it's a competitive system. It's completely decentralized. But Bitcoin uses one algorithm. It's one particular algorithm that they use for solving these blocks. Well, what has happened is people have designed specific hardware just to solve this Bitcoin algorithm. They're called ASICs. As a result, it's really now big mining farms that are mining Bitcoin. You know, it's not somebody in their house doing this anymore. And in fact, interestingly, I think over 50%, I could be wrong on this, of the mining power is concentrated in China.
Yeah.
So it's decentralized, but it's not quite as decentralized. Ravencoin did something pretty interesting. They, instead of having this algorithm that's just one algorithm, it's 16 different algorithms that randomly change. And what this means is you can't afford to, because it's all changing, you can't develop specific hardware. As a result, all of the miners for Ravencoin use GPUs, use graphics processors. In fact, the same cards that you use for gaming. So the network is more distributed. You don't have these big farms. You actually have a wide array of small miners all over the world doing all of the mining. And that keeps it even more decentralized. Yeah, than
true
Bitcoin.
Decentralization.
So from my perspective, it's true decentralization. And just the people that you meet in the Ravencoin community, again, like this is not going to go the way of Ethereum, where all of a sudden we're not going to do proof of work, and you know you get your vote based on how many Ethereum you got. This community is committed to decentralization. So I think decentralization is. So you asked what I think is going to happen. I think decentralization is going to win. I think it's going to be a fight, and I think it's going to get ugly. And I think for a while you're going to have society fracture into two different groups. You're going to have people that have universal basic income that are using a digital central bank currency that has vaccine, you know, proof of vaccine in order to buy anything or do anything. And then you're going to have people that are kind of sovereign citizen using crypto and buying and selling and trading things freely. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Sound quality just changed a little bit, but. Okay. Yeah, I hear you fine.
So So I think it's going to be a hell of a battle, but I think decentralization wins. And I think you're going to see a shakeout within crypto, competing blockchains. And, you know, eventually there are going to be not just one. There's some people like Bitcoin people are max. A lot of them are maximalists and think that there's only going to be Bitcoin and that everything else is going to go away. I don't think that's true, but at the same time, I don't think there's going to be 1,000. I mean, it doesn't make sense to have 100 different cryptocurrencies doing all of this mining, right? So at some point there's going to be some kind of consolidation. But I'm putting all my energy behind Ravencoin because of the commitment to decentralization, because of the community, and because it's, you know, again, it relies on the Bitcoin security model, but yet with more decentralization and tokenization, which allows you to trade more things, quite frankly. So that's how I view it. But I also think you will see cryptos like Monero. There will be a Monero or privacy coins like that. You will see one or more of those persist because they're going to be necessary. You will get to a point, and I think this already started to happen in Europe, where you have to do KYC. You can't have a wallet. You can't withdraw funds from an exchange unless it's verified and tracked. So they're going to start implementing that. And there are already banks that in England that won't let you deposit excess fiat that you earn from crypto into their bank. And I know many people who have had their bank accounts shut down. I've had many friends that have had their bank accounts completely shut down. They've just given a letter from the bank that says, according to our terms of service, we can cancel your account without any reason. We're going to send you a check within 15 days. Have a nice life. That's going to start happening more and more and more. So you know, the bankers are not going to go down easily, which is why my position has been and convert as much. I'm all in, got rid of all my fiat, got the crypto off the exchange. And now, you know, at a minimum, I can conduct peer-to-peer commerce with people no matter what happens with everything else. So,
yeah, that's good advice, man. Okay, last question. Yep. I'm not asking you to give financial advice, just maybe a little couple suggestions. You are brand new to this. You're listening to this show. You just got your $1,400 worth of Biden bucks. You heard me saying to download wallet. What should you do?
I would buy Ravencoin. I mean, and again, it's not giving financial advice. I'm telling you what. I wasn't eligible for the stimulus, but that's what I would have done. I mean, I'm all into Ravencoin, so I won't give you advice. I'll just rather tell you what I've done, which is I've gone all in on Ravencoin. So you know, and in that scenario, I would, I'd go to Binance, or I do what I said, go to Coinbase and use this change now thing, and I would put my crypto either on the Ravencoin desktop wallet. Or I would use, I think Exodus is okay, but you know, I'd use something like, you know, Exodus or the official Ravencoin desktop wallet, and or something called, there's a wallet called Ballet Crypto. It's kind of like a hard wallet. You get like a physical card that has a barcode on it. Yeah. And you can transfer your stuff to it, and then when you go to spend it, you actually scratch it off to get the private key. That's another thing that I would consider doing so that you can keep your crypto completely off of an internet connected device altogether and put it away in storage. If you're buying it, that's if you're buying it because you're speculating. I mean, what I do personally is, you know, I keep most of my crypto in cold storage, but I use my crypto. So if I'm like buying assets or I'm buying things, I'll actually either use Exodus or the official Ravencoin desktop wallet. And now I'm moving into and experimenting more with the Stibitz wallet, which I think has a lot of promise.
Perfect, man. Well, geez, Aaron, this was really informative. I got a lot to catch up on. And just your explanation, the stuff's complicated. It's tough to get into, but it's slowly becoming a little bit more understandable to me. So like everything you explained about the NFTs and tokenization and stuff, it's still going to take a minute for me, but it helped me get a little bit into it better. So
I will tell you this, you can, it's an open source project. So there's no organizational structure for Ravencoin, but it has an incredible community. So you can go on social media, you can go on Twitter, there's a Discord channel, there's a Telegram channel. And, you know, if people have any questions, I would go to either the Telegram group or the Discord group or Twitter. But if you have, people have questions about wallets and everything like that, the community is very responsive. But I would just say, never give your private keys to anyone. No one that's trying to help you will ever ask for your private keys or for your 12 word passphrase. No one legit will ask you for that. So yeah. That's another final piece of advice.
Got it. Well, I know it's late where you're at. I want to thank you so much for moving your schedule around to accommodate us, and we really appreciate it, and we'll stay in contact. Is there anything else you want to tell anybody where they can find you or what they should do to, you kind of just broke it down a little bit.
You can find me at Twitter. I'm at Aaron Day Atlas. That's the name of my account there. That's probably the best place to find me. I mean, I'm on all these other channels, but that's the main one where I'm at. And then Ravencoin is at ravencoin.org. That's the kind of the official site where you can find all of the information, download wallets and find out where to buy things. And then from there, I just say, like, jump in, do your own research and just start asking questions, read the white paper, like get a wallet, create an asset, play with it. Like that's the real fun. Like, to me, it's not buy and just hold as an investment. It's like, I'm actively involved in the community. I want to like create things. I want to build things. I like meeting these people all over the world that are interested in freedom and that are building these projects. And it's early. It's really early. So this is a good time to get in, not just from an investment perspective, but to build things. To build things using this peer-to-peer technology. That's the really exciting part, at least to me.
Awesome. Well, yeah, let's end it there. Guys, go check everything that Aaron just talked about out. And, you know, if you're not in, it's never too late. Well, not yet, at least. So let's be free and let's get rich. So thanks for everything, Aaron. Let's stay in contact. I appreciate it.
All right. Awesome. Thank you for having me. Have a good night.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
See you guys. Love y'all. Bye. We're out.